Toyde Terra Manchester, Gimel, Menachem Av, Toshnai Vav, Rabbi Mishael Goldman.
First of all, I'd like to thank Rabbi Menachem David for giving me this opportunity to speak. How better? And before I start speaking about what's probably a very uncomfortable and sometimes very painful topic, I think it's important for me first to say what gives me the right to stand up here and say what I've got to say, and what gives me the right to talk about these topics with the conviction that I'm going to talk about. So for the last 11 and a half years, I've been zoicha to work on the front line of some of the most precious neshamas of Klal Yisrael. First, when I originally got married, I taught in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, after which I set up my own yeshiva together with Rabbi White. I set up my own yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, after which, for the last 6 years, I have run a yeshiva over here in Manchester. I've been zoicha to have a very unique view on what goes on in the minds of teenagers. And what I'm going to say is not necessarily applicable of what I've seen in yeshiva, but also from many families and many children that I've helped outside the realms of yeshiva. And of course, what I'm going to say is that there's not one size that fits all. Chinuch is not something which can be put into a box. There's no simple solution for training our children and helping our children get through the very tough teenage years with all the nisyonos that come with it. And of course, it's not possible to say that one method is going to definitely work with everybody. And when we have regular children, we have children who are going in a regular pattern and are doing very well, then what I'm going to say does not in general apply to them, but what I'm going to say applies to the struggling children that we see wherever we turn, to the Magefa that's sweeping through all of Klal Yisrael around the world, and it can be applied by everybody to their children already from the age of 2 to 3 years old. But Shlomo Volba writes already many years ago that it's the duty of a parent to build the relationship with his child from 2 to 3 years old, that the relationship will be so strong that it will last through the stresses and through the tension of the teenage years. That's how strong the relationship has to be before the child hits the teenage years. So today's topic is, what can we do as a kehillah? What can we do as grandparents, as members of a kehillah, as parents? What are we able to do when we see children who are struggling, when we see children who don't seem to be following the path that we would like them to follow or that we brought them up to follow? And the truth is, as somebody said to me as I walked into Machzik Hadass this morning, he said to me, what I should really do is face the front and say Tehillim, because in truth there isn't anything else other than to daven. The only guaranteed way is to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to daven for every person you know, and even to take, if you see a child struggling, to take their name, find out from their parents their name and daven for that child, because that is really the only way that we can really be guaranteed to hopefully see nachas from all of Klal Yisrael, is by davening for it. But there is things that each and every one of us can do, that each and every one of us can achieve and can make a difference to reverse the effects that have been taking place and have been devastating our youth. And Amitz Hashem, that's what I'm going to try and speak about this morning. Now, I understand a few weeks ago, Rabbi Martin spoke over here, and Menachem David asked me to listen to the drasha before I spoke in order that we shouldn't keep saying the same things. I did start listening to the drasha, but after the first 3 minutes, I turned it off. Not because it was very interesting, but because I felt that even if we do say the same things, then it doesn't matter. It shows that this is Emes La'Amitoi. It's not so one person's opinion, it's not my opinion, it's not his opinion, but this is the truth of what's really going on the front line, and this is a unique view that any soldier, any person who's zoicha to see what goes on, the true essence of the Yiddish neshama in children who look otherwise struggling, that is the truth. And if I do say the same things, I apologize, but it's only because this is what's really going on. So before I start, it's important to recap. I'm not 100% sure what he said, but it's important to realize and internalize. Often I hear children are being called a Bal Taiva. Often I hear that these teenagers who we see struggling are Bali Taiva, and all they're doing is following the Taivas, and sometimes they need to get a good shtoyz, and they need to be told, these are the boundaries, these are the red lines, and it's about time you got your act together and stop following your Taivas. A Bal Taiva, I think everyone can agree that the Omas HaOlam are pretty much into their Taivas. The Omer Sa'olim have got no problem partying a whole weekend, a whole Saturday night, a whole Sunday, and they will be in work on Sunday morning, out Monday morning at 9 o'clock, maybe with a hangover, but they'll be in work and they can function. A Baal Tiver is somebody who can function even though he can follow his Tivers. Unfortunately, we see a devastating effect among the youth of the Yiddish Kehillahs that they do not function. They don't get up in the morning, they can't hold down a job, they can't speak with respect to other people. They are not Baal Tiver. A Baal Tiver can function without a problem. A child that can do well will do well. I have never yet met a child who doesn't want to do well. There's not one child, and I've met hundreds and hundreds of teenagers, and I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of teenagers, and not one has ever decided that my life is so wonderful and so rosy, and everything's going so wonderfully well for me, that now it's time to pack it all in, and he chooses a different derech. Not one have I ever mentioned that. Worse than anything is when a child hears to stop looking for an excuse to go off the derech. Many times a child is told, and I've heard this, I've been told this by well-meaning individuals, I've heard it from Rabbonim, but worse than anything is when a child hears from somebody that he trusts, somebody he has belief in, that he should stop looking for an excuse to go off the derech, is tantamount to murder. It's, as we'll explain soon, it's a terrible, terrible thing to say, even with the best intentions. There is no such thing as a child who looks for an excuse to go off the derech. I, as I said, have worked with hundreds of children. I have never yet met one. Rav Shimon Russell, who is one of the biggest psychotherapists in the Jewish world, has worked with thousands and thousands of children. And he says that he can count on one hand the number of children who have chosen to say that they've thought it through, that Yiddishkeit is simply not for them. They've thought it through from all angles, and although life's going very well, they've chosen that this is a different derech. Other than that, we first have to realize and internalize there is almost no such thing as a child who says, you know what, life is so rosy and so wonderful, my Rebbeim love me so much, my teachers love me so much, I'm getting compliments every day, I'm learning so well, my parents really love me, the Kehillah loves me, I'm one of the most popular people in town, and you know what, it's time for something else, it's time to follow my addictions, it's time to follow my tithers, there is no such thing. Right, so it's a good question. What is the derech? The question is, what is a derech? We have definitely narrowed the derech down to a certain way where we want children to be nachas machines, to give us nachas. Rav Shlomo Volber writes that there is no such, a child is not a nachas machine. When a person has a child, and he brings from the Chofetz Chaim, he forfeits his right to being himself, and he has to give over his life to his children. From when he has children, it's now his children's life. It's nothing to do with him, and they're not nachas machines, and they're not mechoyev. I'm talking about dysfunctional children who are dysfunctional, not a child who sleeps in the morning, but more about the children who are really struggling with who they are, or struggling with emotional pain inside them, and are really not functioning. Somebody who doesn't get up for Shacharis, most bochrim like a lion, especially when they come home during Bein Hazmanim, and it is difficult for many people to get up in the morning, but I'm talking about more along the lines of children who are struggling to be able to function along the lines of what would you expect from a regular teenager. Belief in Hashem, belief in Torah Mitzvahs, who they are, where do they belong, and anger and frustration. So, there's also something which is important to understand, and that is the difference between guilt and shame. The difference between guilt and shame is as follows. When somebody does something wrong, they sometimes feel guilty. They feel like, what I did was wrong, and next time, I'll try and do better. It's action-based. When somebody is guilty, they feel it's action-based, it's not person-based. Shame, when somebody is ashamed, when somebody feels embarrassed, that is person-based. The person himself feels not that I made a mistake, like with guilt, but rather I am a mistake. When a person's ashamed and told, you're nothing, you're never going to be anything, that is a feeling of I am a mistake, not I made a mistake. When a person is guilty, feels guilty, he has the idea that next time I will try better. Next time I will do my best to do well. But a person who's full of shame for who he is doesn't feel that next time I'll do better. He feels I have no right to belong. He feels, since I'm a mistake, who am I to be part of the success of Yiddishkeit? Who am I to be part of the success of the wonderful Kehillah that we live in? And what right do I have? Because if people really knew what was going on inside me, of all the terrible things that I've done, and all the terrible things that I've seen, then they would never accept me for who I am. They would never allow me to be who I am. And therefore, it becomes person-based rather than action-based. And that is the worst possible thing to happen to any human being. So much so that this is the pain that many, many, many children are going through. The feeling of shame that I do not belong. I can't give the nachas that my parents are so desperately asking me to give them. I can't function in school. I can't give the rebbes the marks on the fehers that they're so desperately telling me that I can do. I can't please the kehillah when I come into shul and I get told to daven like a mensch and I get told to wear this or wear that. I can't do it, and therefore I have no right to belong. And sometimes, and I've heard the story, I personally heard the story from Reb Avi Fishoff, who's a big tzaddik who lives in America, and he spends his life helping parents and siblings of children who have never gone off the derech. And he told me a story of a child who unfortunately went over to a family portrait and he ripped his face out of the portrait that was on the wall because he felt so ashamed of who he is. He felt that he had no right to belong and he ripped his face out of the family portrait. I'm going to share a true story which happened a few years ago in Eretz Yisrael. It's a very sad story, but it's important to understand what is actually going on and not to just point fingers and accuse. There was a Hasidic boy who came from a Hasidic family, and he was starting to move away from the parents' derech. His kapel had already changed. He wore his rekel still, but it was worn open without a gattle. His payers were ready. His krasadik payers had already gone behind his ear. And he was already changing from the derech of the family. His sister became a kala, and he was very excited, and he was very looking forward to taking part in the engagement. And he came into the hall where the engagement was taking place without his hat, with his payers behind, a bit gelled maybe, and his rekel open, not looking like he should have for the occasion. One of the family members came running over to him and screamed at him, "Wer darf dich du? Who needs you over here? You have to come here like this and embarrass the whole family. Can't you just be a mensch and put your rekel on and put your hat on properly? You have to, wherever you go in public, you have to embarrass us." And the boy was so embarrassed, he left the hall in shame. The parents came home that night, and this is true, I've seen the picture of the Bach and I've seen the Levaya notices. The parents came home that night, they found the boy had hanged himself. That was the pain, that was the embarrassment that one wrong comment gave to this boy. That one wrong comment that this boy suffered. All he wanted was to be part of the family simcha, but all the family could see was, how is this boy embarrassing our family? And how is this boy being so, how has he got no feelings and he doesn't care about us? And that's what led him to take his life. And unfortunately, the suicide rate in America is tracked by a Moyudig organization called Amudim in America. The suicide rate in New York, in Lakewood and Borough Park, stands at over 75 Yiddish neshamas since the beginning of this year. I know these are painful facts, but it's important to know and realize we're dealing with mamish, sakonis nefashis mamish. There's no other way of looking at it. These are haimish children that we're talking about, haimish suicides, overdoses on drugs. The Nesivei Shalom in his Sefer, the Slonim Rebbe in his Sefer, Nesivei Chinuch, he writes as well, and this is a number of years ago, long before we had this off the derech phenomenon, and he writes, Harei Kolmas, he's talking about, again, very important to say, that we're talking about children who are suffering, children who are emotionally damaged, and children that we see are not following the right derech. Harei Kolmas Gano Va'oineh Sheloi B'makim Anochein, any misplaced discipline, Yisabich as a yelet pi kama, will aggravate the child many, many, many times more. Shebemuvan haruchni zeka hoyrig nefesh mamish. He writes it very clearly that misplaced discipline is like kahoyrig nefesh mamish. Now, how do we know if we're doing the right discipline or not the right discipline? How do we know if this is a child who's taking advantage or not taking advantage? That's a risk one has to take. And the question is, if one wants to err on the side of caution and rather not use misplaced discipline, in the off chance that this might not be a child who's just taking us for a ride, but might really be a child who's really struggling and suffering. Reb Gamliel Rabinovich, who's a Mekubel in Eretz Yisrael, speaks very, very strongly about giving warmth and love to children we see struggling. And he writes that today's teenagers have got a din of a mace mitzvah. A mace mitzvah is something that even the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur would have to be metame himself to deal with. Because this is an achrayas for every single one of us. If it's a mace mitzvah, that means every one of us, we don't just have to be in the Chevra Kedisha to deal with it, but everyone would have to deal with the mace mitzvah. And so too our children on achrayas on every single one of us as a Yiddish nation to deal with.
those people who look after them. They have to raise their own money. Well, how comes? They're just speaking under the capital. It doesn't exist.
It's a question which needs addressing, and hopefully things will change as people realise. There's more of an awareness. It's a very good question. As there's more of an awareness in Mitzvah Shem, then people will tackle and realise, just as in the 1960s, a Baal Teshuva movement was what was necessary for Klal Yisrael in order to survive, so too today. There's a very good story in Rabbi Yossi Vales, who's the head of Arachim. He writes in a Moed book which just came out, incredible, and he writes there his story. He writes that when he first went collecting for Arachim, he came to Moshe Reifman. And it was a long story. He just got a long plane journey. He came there in the pouring rain. And Rav Moshe Reichman asked him for his letters of approbation from Rav Shimshon Pinkas, who had set up the meeting. And he was so tired and so fed up. He was looking for his letters. He couldn't find them. He just burst out crying. And he says, "Why have I got to come to you over here? You should come to America. You should come to Eretz Yisrael to me. This is what Klal Yisrael needs right now. And you should come and give me the money over there." And Rav Moshe Reichman said, "You're right." And he arranged a parlor meeting for him where they raised $1.5 million for the first parlor meeting. Today, the struggling youth are what we all need to be busy with. It's like the Baal Teshuva movement was, and today this is what the future of Klal Yisrael is dependent on. We need to hold our dear youth very, very close, and you're right, it's a shame that it's not supported as it should be. It's a shame the recognition is not given as much. It's very often only given when people are bitten by it, when people have first-hand experience of the pain, and it doesn't. There more needs to be done on that front. 100% more needs to be done on that front. So, how should we react? After we've said that it's so dangerous to say the wrong thing, how should one react when one sees a child with a silly haircut, when one sees a child with wearing different clothes than one expects him to wear, or even when he changes his kapel, if there's some sort of a difference, if there's a piece of cloth around the outside of it, or it's a rimless or a rimmed, how should one react when we see a child who's changed his kapel and looks different from the rest of the kehillah? How should we react even if we see a child, chas v'shalom, be mechalel Shabbos? What should be our reaction when we see such a thing? So this week's parasha brings us the answer. In the third pasuk of this week's parasha, Rashi asks, where did Moshe Rabbeinu learn from to tell off Klal Yisrael? And he says, Lomad mi Yaakov. He learned from Yaakov Avinu, who only told off Reuven, somach lemisasei. Reuven did a gefelech aveira, he messed around in his father's private affairs. And 45 years, Yaakov Avinu didn't say a word to Reuven. And when he came to his death, when Yaakov Avinu was on his deathbed, he called over Reuven and he said to him, "I'm telling you off now for what you did 45 years ago." And says Rashi, he said, "Reuven bini, ani yoimeloch, I'm going to tell you, why did I not tell you off kol hashanim halalu, all these 45 years? Because I was worried, kidei shelo tanicheni, you should not leave me, the tidbak be'esav achi, and go and join Esav." Yaakov Avinu kept himself quiet for 45 years and didn't tell off his son in case Reuven would go and join Esav. So when we see a child who we feel is doing something terrible, we see that he's doing things which need a good Musa Drasha, he needs to be told off and put into his place. We have three questions to ask ourselves. Are we a better Baal Musa than Yaakov Avinu? Is our child a better Mekabel of Musa than Reuven, the first of the shifted car? And third of all, maybe today we don't have to worry about Esav. Now if you think the answer to those two questions, the first two questions are yes, that you are a better Baal Musa, and you'll have the ability to say a better Musa Drasha than Yaakov Avinu, and that your child or the person you're talking to in the Kehillah is somebody better who can be Mekabel Musa more than Reuven, then let me tell you, the answer to the third question is that we do today have to worry about Esav a lot more than Yaakov had to worry about Esav in those days. It's Kahirig Nefesh Mamish. Absolutely. It's Kahirig Nefesh Mamish. It's tantamount to murder. Somebody who does that is tantamount to murder. There's no other word for it. It's murder. It's murder. Now Rav Shach writes many, many years ago, and we seem to have missed this, Rav Shach writes in a letter in the 1980s, he wrote to me, Moshe Yeshua ben Gamla, from the days of Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla, the chiyuv to be mechanach children is no longer on the parent, but rather on the schools. The schools have an obligation to be mechanach the children in Torah and Avodah, and the parents... The reason, and he says a reason as well, because he says if the parents are being mechanic the children at home, it could be that they'll miss out on the chum and the ava, on the warmth and the love that they really need, and they will search for it elsewhere. Now let me bring that down into today's 2016 terms. You have a child who does something, let's take an extreme example, he goes and shoplifts and he thinks it's the biggest joke, look where he managed to pinch from the shop. And the same applies to somebody who comes home with a silly haircut or anything which is out of our comfort zone. He comes home and he looks for the approval of his parent. He says, look what I did today, how cool do you think that was? And obviously the parent will come and give him a well-deserved mustard rasha. Who do you think you are stealing like that? And what trouble he's going to get into? If it's the haircuts, what are you looking like that for? Whatever the comments that come with it. Immediately the child will go and he'll post a picture on Facebook, on Snapchat, on any of the many social media platforms out there. Within minutes, he will have thousands of likes and thousands of comments about how cool this child is and what a cool thing you did. Now, automatically the child thinks to himself, I am cool. I'm cool. I've been told I'm cool by so many children, by so many people out there. Likewise, the ace of out there, which is so accepting and so waiting for people and so ready to give warmth and love, every child feels that I am the cool one and my parents and the kahila around me are the outdated ones. And Khalil of the Chas, like Roshach said, we become irrelevant in our children's lives. And as soon as a parent becomes irrelevant in a child's lives, or the kahila, by extension, becomes irrelevant in a child's life, then that is where we are losing the children, and that is where the child will always look for acceptance and warmth somewhere else. And the ace of today is there, out there. Doesn't have to leave his own bedroom in order to be able to access the ace of out there. Rav Avi Fishoff told me a story as well of a girl who lost her phone. She lost her iPhone smashed. Her father was extremely happy that this is it. He managed to stop his daughter being on social media and stop the terrible Yetzirah of a smartphone. And he refused to give her money for a new one. Within minutes, she had boys happy transferring her money. She posted it online, and within minutes, she had people ready to donate her a new phone. Unfortunately, the internet's very available. Facebook's very available. Everything's very available in all the local areas for free. And children are accessing these things, and they will find the warmth and love elsewhere if we are not the ones giving them the warmth of love, as Roshach says. And sometimes it's important to remember every time that we see when we want to give a mussar drasha, and we remember we're not like Yaakov Avinu. We remember that our children are not like Reuven, and we remember that Esav is waiting for our children. It makes it easier to remember when we see our children doing something wrong that it's not them. Again, it's not them who's doing it. It's the trauma and the bitterness inside them which is causing them to do these terrible things.
Should we say,
great shoplifting, great theft?
I mean, what can we do?
One has to use seichel how to do it, but that was obviously if a child is, if a child is doing that, if the haircut for sure, one has to definitely compliment him on it. It's beautiful. Maybe 3 days later, say, you know, you look a bit silly. Maybe you could do it a bit better like this. I've had the case before in yeshiva. A boy came with a ridiculous haircut, so I told him it's absolutely wonderful, and it really was painful because he's going around town and it gives a bad name to the yeshiva. It's not what the yeshiva is, and it was very, very painful. 3 days later, I told him his sister's chasna was coming up. So I said to him, listen, you've got your sister's chasna coming up. Between you and me, it's a cool haircut, but you look a bit daft to people who don't know it. And I tidied up the haircut for him. I gave him, and it still looked cool afterwards, but one has to use out-of-the-box things in order to show them. Obviously, if a kid's shoplifting, there's something deeper. It's not just that he's decided one day to shoplift. So we might have to be his best friend. Otherwise, things are just going to spiral out of control.
Well, it's kind of correct in not giving him a smartphone.
That's a very important nakuda. A child can get hold of a smartphone if he wants. There's nothing you can do to stop it. If a child's getting hold of a smartphone, he will get hold of one. There's nothing you can do to stop it. They're only looking for it. Healthy children are not looking for it. There's children who are not feeling so healthy. It depends who you want. It depends who you want to buy them the next smartphone. If you want the boys out there on Facebook to buy them the next smartphone, yeah. So it's very difficult to say. Each and every individual case is very, very difficult. But one has to be on board with their children. The ikkar nekuda is you have to be on board with your children. And again, I'm not talking about regular cases. I'm talking about extreme cases. I'm talking about what can be applied, the same nekudas can be applied in every single area, always to a different thing. Perfect. I've got the perfect. My next story is about smoking on Shabbos. Let me explain to you this story. It's not them, it's the pain inside of them. There's a famous story. Today, if the schools were like they were probably in the days of Roshach, then things would probably be different. Today we do need to adjust. If the schools, everything needs to be adjusted accordingly in line. But sometimes, yes, of course, at home we can give chinuch, but and not at the expense of our relationship with our child. Everything can be applied, and I'm happy to take questions afterwards, but I'm going to carry on with the story that I was about to say. We have to remember that the pain that the children are going through, the pain that is going on among the children who are smoking perhaps on Singleton Road, the children who are smoking there, the pain that's going, it's not them who's doing it, it's the pain that causes them to do this. There's a story with Rav Shlomo Bobova, who's Yahrzeit roundabout now. Rav Shlomo Bobova, after the war, came to America, and he set up, he was trying to rebuild the Bobova Hasidus. And he rented a room on the Lower East Side in Manhattan, and he had a little minion going over there, and they struggled often to get a minion. And one day he was standing outside on the Erev Shabbos, he was standing on the Lower East Side on Erev Shabbos, and he was looking for a tzeinta, and he sees a yid walking past with his cap pulled down low over his eyes, the New York Times under his arm, and he sees him, and he says, "Rav Yid, actually you want to come and join us in with the minion?" So the Yid starts turning around. No, he's finished with all that. It's nothing to do with him. He's been through the camps and everything else. So Shlomo told him, "I've also been through the war." And he listened to what the Yid had to say. And the Yid was complaining bitterly how he's thrown it all in. He lost his wife and children. And he lost his parents. And he lost his grandparents. And he was saying how they were all chazonim. He is a chazon. His father was a chazon. And his grandfather was a chazon. So Shlomo Bava picked up on it. And he said, "Brilliant. I need a chazon for our minion over here. Come and join us." So, it was too much for him to resist to use his cantorial skills again. So he came into the minyan, and he was the chazan. And Rav Shlomo spent the whole davening admiring this fellow, how he was davening. It was so beautiful and how wonderful it is. And he was taking such a geschmack in the davening. And after davening, he went over to him and said, "That was so beautiful. I can't imagine a davening without you. It has to be that you have to be our chazan." And so that's how it went. For the next few weeks, the next few months, this fellow was the chazan in Rav Shlomo's early minyan. One day, two of the Hasidim came into Rav Shlomo Bobova and they said to him, "You know our chazan, you're going to have to get rid of him. We saw him smoking in the park on Shabbos." So Rav Shlomo Bobova says, "No, you didn't." No, we did, Rebbe. I'm telling you, can ask Yankel over here. We saw him smoking in the park on Shabbos." Rav Shlomo said, "You didn't see him smoking in the park on Shabbos." He goes, no, we did. I'm telling you, there's two of us. We've got Edom over here. We saw him smoking in the park on Shabbos." The Rebbe wasn't having any of it. He didn't take any notice of them. And Faket, they asked him, "Please, at least don't let him daven on the Yomud. How can you have a Mechal Shabbos davening on the Yomud?" He said, "I'm sorry, you didn't see him smoking." And he was Mechabed him even more, made sure he got the most Choshev Aliyahs. And time went by, and Bobov grew into the big Hasidus, and the Chazan went his own way, and things grew. Many years later, when Bobov was an enormous Hasidus, one day, an old man pushes his way to the front at the end of Shal HaShudas, waits till after Avdallah, and comes over to the Rebbe and says to Rav Shlomo, "Do you remember me?" So the Rebbe says, "No, I'm not sure." So he says, "I was the chazan in the Lower East Side many years ago." He says, "Ah, Vada." So he goes, "I'll tell you, I'm making my first grandchild Sheva Brochas tomorrow, and I'd like it if the Rebbe could come and join us for the Sheva Brochas at this and this place." And Rav Shlomo said, "For sure, with pleasure." And the next day, he calls over the two Hasidim from the minyan originally, and he says to them, "We've got Sheva Brochas to go to." They're wondering who's in the kelis making a Sheva Brochas. So they come with the Rebbe, and they come into this hall where they see Yiddish Kinderlach running around, and it's a matzav, as Yiddish simchas are. And the old man comes running over to Rav Shlomo, and he says to Rav Shlomo, "Oh, thank you so much, Rebbe, that you're here." And he brings him over to the table, and he sits him down. Rav Shlomo turns round to the two Hasidim with him, and he says to them, "Do you recognize who this person was?" So they said, "No." So they said, "He was our chazan from the Lower East Side." So they said, "Oh, the guy who was smoking the park in Shabbos." He goes, "Yes." So they said, why was he so insistent on not accepting what we saw with our own eyes?" So he said, "Let me tell you something. What you saw wasn't what this person was doing. It was the Nazi inside of him doing this. It was the pain and the bitterness that he'd suffered through all those years in the camps. The loss and the terrible feelings inside of him which have caused him to do what he's doing. And if we would have chucked him out then, we wouldn't have allowed him to be who he is, you wouldn't be seeing all these Yiddish Adonis over here in this hall today." There's a story with the Chazon Ish brought down in Masa Ish, Perek Beis. And the Chazon Ish was long before we had this phenomenon which was so in our face. The Chazon Ish had a father who came to him, he had a 17-year-old boy who was going away from the derech that he'd been brought up to be on. And the father was a wealthy fellow, and his son wanted a car. And the father wanted to make a condition that the son should not drive it on Shabbos. So the son wasn't having any of it. "I'll do what I want with my own car," although the father's paying for it. But that's what's going through his mind. He'll do what he wants with his own car. So he went to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish told him, "Buy him the car with no preconditions." Don't make any conditions on it, because this is the only way that we can hold the door open, and it's the only way that this child will come back. And as Taka, the only way that we can hold the door wide open in order to ensure that our children do always have a place to call home and always have a kehillah where they can feel that they're comfortable and not told off and not judged, is by holding the door wide open no matter where they're holding. There's an unbelievable Shemesh Shmuel in Parshas Ki Tsetse in Kuf Lamed Zayin. He brings there the Gemara in Sanhedrin Perichas about Ben Soira Moira. Now we all know Ben Soira Moira, who does things wrong, he doesn't listen to his parents, he steals, he guzzles, and he's Nidin Hashem Sofai, he gets punished, he gets brought to Beis Din, and he gets killed. If, however, says the Gemara, if the parents want to forgive him, then Moichalin Loi, we forgive him. Ask the Shemesh Shmuel two questions. We know a Ben Soira Moira is judged al Shem Sofa. He's judged because eventually, with this type of behavior, he's going to turn out to be a murderer. So therefore, we better that he should die zakai, he should die innocent, then be killed, then later he should be guilty. So we kill him now that he should die innocent. That's a Shem Shmuel, since when do we give up on a Yid's ability to do teshuva? Every single Yid can do teshuva. So why now, if this behavior is so bad, say he can't do teshuva? Is it certain that this behavior can't do teshuva? And if we are certain that this behavior is a type of behavior which is impossible to do teshuva for, then what difference does it make if his father and mother want to be moichalim? What difference should it make? And he answers very bekitza. He says that the essence of a yid is a bnei Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Every single one of us have inside is a pure neshama. Our averus make us stumble, and we lose that connection, and the teshuva helps us reconnect with our shalshelis hakodesh, the shalshelis, the chain that goes all the way back to Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. We can reconnect with that chain. If a parent, says Hashem Shmuel, disconnects that chain, and obviously they are disconnecting the chain because they want him killed, they've taken him to basin to be killed, they're disconnecting the chain, then it's impossible for that child to ever be able to do teshuva. He cannot reconnect to that chain. And therefore we have to kill him al Shem Sofa. If, however, the father and mother are moichel him, that means he steals, and they say, I love you anyway. That means he's embarrassing them. I love you anyway. He's taking the food, he's causing trouble at home, he's not listening to what they're saying, but I love you anyway. There's nothing that you can do that will make me change my love for you. Then we don't kill him. We don't need to kill him, because it's more than likely this child will reconnect with the Shalshelis HaKodesh, will reconnect with the chain which connects him all the way back to Avraham Avinu and Mahomet Har Sinai. A few weeks ago, Rav Pesach Ron spoke in my yeshiva. Thank you, Chaim. That Rav Pesach Ron had breakfast in our yeshiva, and he spoke in our yeshiva. And he spoke there about how every yid has been through experiences in life, and every yid through those experiences can be something. No matter where we are in life, no matter what experiences we have, those experiences are there to be used in order to be able to help other people, and we can all be a kosher bracha for somebody else. And he gave the example of somebody's lying in hospital, hooked up to machines, he's just had a heart attack. And a young fellow comes in who's never had to suffer such a thing, and he comes and says, don't worry, you'll be alright. And the poor fellow's lying there, not sure if he's ever going to see his loved ones again. And the young fellow comes in, yeah, you'll be okay. Doesn't really mean much to him. But somebody who's been through a heart attack and comes there and says to him, listen, don't worry, I've been through it, I know what you're feeling, and it gives him a chizuk, then such a person will obviously take a chizuk from another person who's been through a similar experience. And he said to the Bokhrim, no matter what experiences you've been through in life, those experiences are what you can use to be your kosher bracha, to flow over and help other people who are going through similar experiences. One of the true askanim in this town was telling me a few weeks ago how he gets asked to get involved in many, many different cases. Unfortunately, lots of soros in Klal Yisrael, there shouldn't be any more. And he asks people, so why don't you do your bit? Whether it's visiting somebody in a place, whether it's going to a hospital, whether it's being giving an encouraging word to somebody who's struggling. And they turn around to him and say, ich bin nicht geasken. I'm not an asken. Now the truth is, every single one of us can be an asken by using our own experiences and using those experiences to help others to get through what they're experiencing right now. There is a story I want to say, but we're running out of time, so I'm not going to say the story. But it's important to know that everybody has an experience that they can share with somebody else. Everyone is an askan in the fact that they can help somebody. There's so many people who have struggled. Children struggle growing up. It's a fact. Children will struggle. And many of us have been through struggles with our children, and they see other people who are struggling as well. I get calls from many, many different parents who are struggling but don't know where to turn. They have no help when they're going through terrible nisyonas, when they don't know how to react to what's happening in their homes, and they have no one to turn to for support. Surely there's been so many people who have struggled on different levels that there can be some sort of support group to help people who are struggling. to give them an encouraging word. Don't worry, you can come through it. And don't worry, when somebody makes a simcha, and they see that somebody, they're not sure how to react because the child doesn't get engaged, or is not the person who they would have chosen as the child's erstwhile partner. Go over to them, give them a word of chizuk. Give them a word of chizuk. It's fine. I've been through the same thing. And it's fine, you'll get nachas from them. It's important to share experiences. But more than anything, no one wants to be the murderer who's going to say the wrong word to a child who walks into a Beis HaMedrash without a hat, or with a funny haircut, or with a different color shirt, or with different trousers, or whatever else he's wearing. Nobody wants to give one of these precious neshamas the final dig in the heart to give him the excuse to give up entirely. No. No one wants to be ignored. Everyone wants to be accepted for who they are. And I know many times, they feel complex on who they are. And I know many times, we're talking about, it's important to remember, we're talking about there's trauma or something going on beneath the surface. Nobody wants to be ignored. Everyone wants to be accepted for who they are. Everyone wants to feel comfortable with who they are. I've heard from somebody before, many years ago, walked into Masjid Kadas. He got a comment for how he was looking, and that was it. He didn't have a mincha or ma'ariv that day. Now, the Medrash says, I'd just like to finish off the Medrash. The Medrash says that the Rebbeinu Shlom has two children. He has the Malachim, the Malachi Asharis, and he has Klal Yisrael. The Malachi Asharis were around long before Klal Yisrael. Says the Medrash, the Rebbeinu Shlom used the words, B'ni B'chayri Yisrael. The beloved expression, the biggest expression of love that a person can give, is my firstborn son, Klal Yisrael. That is, we are chosen above the Malachim as the beloved child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the firstborn child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if you ask many people without a knowledge of the Torah, when would Hashem use that beloved expression of B'ni B'chayri Yisrael, my beloved firstborn child, Klal Yisrael? Most people would say, it was by Matan Torah, at the pinnacle of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'ni B'chayri Yisrael, my beloved firstborn, Klal Yisrael. That is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reiterated, you are my beloved children. And the truth is that when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say B'ni B'chayri Yisrael? When he told Moshe Rabbeinu to take them out from the Memtes Shari Tumah. They were right at the bottom. They looked disgusting. They looked a lot worse than anything we see nowadays. They were on the Memtes Shari Tumah. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reiterated, B'ni B'chayri Yisrael, you're my beloved firstborn Klal Yisrael. As in Nesiv Shalom, surely it should have been by Matan Torah. Why dafka then, when they were so filthy, when they were so doing such avarice that we can't even imagine today? It was so bad. Says in Nesiv Shalom, because if it ever comes to a time later on in the history of Klal Yisrael, when a child or a yid is struggling with who they are, is struggling with the avarice that they're doing, then they imagine that I am not a child of HaKadosh Baruch anymore. I have no right to be a yid. I'm ashamed of what I do. I'm not happy with what I do. And therefore I have no right to be part of Klal Yisrael. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'ni B'chayri Yisrael, you're still my beloved firstborn Klal Yisrael. No matter how low you drop, you are still going to be my beloved, beloved firstborn. And there's nothing that you can do that will change that. Even if you get as far as the Memtes Shari Tumah. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have said that even on the 35th level of Tumah, we would still feel maybe I'm below that 35th level of Tumah, and therefore I'm no longer a beloved child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it doesn't matter how low you are, even the Memtes Shari Tumah, you are all my beloved children. There was once an old man who had two children, and they grew up in a little village in poverty. And the two brothers, Yankel and Shlomi, spent the years growing up together, carefree teenage years, carefree childhood years, growing up on a little farm, growing up in a little village, and spending many, many happy times together. As life moved on, Yankel became a very successful, wealthy businessman, and he moved to the town and got married. And Shlomi stayed in his village, he married over there, and he was still in the poverty-stricken village, and he never managed to make any money. One day, Shlomi's wife comes over to him and says to him, listen, we're struggling so badly. How about you go to your brother Yankel and say to Yankel, come on, help us out. You're doing so well. Give us a hand. So he sends a telegram over to his brother Yankel, and he doesn't receive a reply. So he decides he's going to have to go and scrape the money together for a carriage. And he gets onto a wagon, and off he goes. Off he goes. And he gets over to where his brother lives, and he comes to the big business empire where his brother works. He comes in at the door and he says, I'd like to speak to Yankel. So they say to him, I'm sorry, do you have an appointment? So he says, no, I don't have an appointment, but he's my brother. I'm his brother, Shlomi. So they send a message up, your brother Shlomi's here. No, nothing doing, you're not allowed in. So he says, did you tell him that I'm his brother? That it's here, me, it's Shlomi over here. So he said, no, he doesn't have a brother, Yankel, he said. Yankel says he doesn't have a brother, Shlomi. So Shlomi's having none of this. he goes upstairs and he pushes past the people outside the office and he storms into the office and he goes, "Oh, Yankel, I'm here. It's me, Shlomi." Yankel looks at him with a blank expression. "I'm sorry, I don't know who you are." "What do you mean you don't know who I am? We used to play in the treehouse together. Remember, we built the treehouse. We played around over there." And he starts reminding him of the childhood memories. "I don't have a brother, Shlomi." She goes, "Please, Yankel, it's not a joking matter. I'm struggling so badly. Please, will you help me out? If you don't leave my office, I'll have to call security to take you out." "Yankel, how can you do this to me?" He calls security and Shlomi gets booted out of the office. And he goes back home and carries on his life, obviously very upset with his brother's reaction to him. Months go by and Yankel gets a telegram. "Your father is on his deathbed. If you want to see him before he dies, you must hurry up and come home." He comes home, he takes a first-class carriage, takes a first-class train, and he comes back to the village where he grew up, and he pushes open the door to his father's hovel, comes upstairs, and indeed his father's lying on the deathbed, and he's lying in bed there, and he's got his face turned away from the door to his brother. Shlomi is sitting on the other side of the bed. So he pulls up a chair, and he sits down next to the bed, and the minutes and the hours go by, and his father doesn't turn around to him, and he coughs, and he sort of shifts his chair, he wants some attention, and eventually he can't hold himself back anymore, and he goes, "Tata, ich bin auch Hazin. I'm also a child." And his father turns around to him and he says, "If er nicht dein Bruder, if he's not your brother, ich bin nicht dein Tata. I am not your father." In just a few months' time, in a few weeks' time, we're going to be standing by the Rebbeinu Shlomo saying Selichas. We're going to be davening Avinu Malkeinu, our father, our king. Kerachim of Abonim. We're going to be standing on Rosh Hashanah, Kerachim of Abonim. If we don't have true love for every single one of our precious, precious neshamas in Klal Yisrael, if we feel we're above some of the other people in Klal Yisrael, we feel that they're not our brothers. Why do you waste your time with these boys, as I've been told many times? Why do you waste your time with children who are not going to mainstream, who are not spending the whole day learning? If we have that attitude, that there is a child out there who is not B'nai B'Fori Yisrael, then Chas V'Shalom, the Rebbeinu Shlomo can turn around and say, "Ob er nicht dein Bruder, ich bin nicht dein Tata."
Shimon and Levi had a kindred spirit in each other. He wasn't worried that he was going to find another kindred spirit. Living was on his own. He would find a kindred spirit.
Can I just ask something? I heard that the show. I heard the show's demonstration. Did you sell it?